So today we're looking at new topic, quantitative chemistry. Quantitative chemistry, if you pay attention to the name, is about how much stuff there is. So it's about how much stuff. Okay, so first gap in the slide, finding how much of a substance is involved in a reaction is called quantitative chemistry. So the amount of substance or how many atoms. This is about counting. So at one level you can say quantitative chemistry is purely mathematical. It's all about counting and weighing. Now the subtlety in this is that we've got two versions, which is quantitative chemistry and qualitative chemistry. This is quantitative. Quantity, how much? Qualitative, what kind of thing? Yeah, so quality is how, yeah, what proportion, what percentage, or what's actually in there. You've done qualitative chemistry with the identification of ions. Is this iron 3 or is this silver? That's qualitative. Okay, so the big deal in chemistry is that all matter is made of atoms. The important thing when we're looking at atoms is, what's the thing that makes atoms different?
Atom.
No. Before, what's the thing that makes makes electrons? That determines the number of electrons in an atom? Protons. Protons are what makes atoms different. Protons, the number of protons is the atomic number. And if we're going to be really technical about it, the protons weigh something and electrons don't. For any kind of thing that we're going to be weighing. Mass of an electron is so small that it's not significant in quantitative chemistry. So what we need in chemistry is a counting number. Because atoms are so very, very small, we need to find the generic number we use for counting is very, very big. And we sort of unconsciously use counting numbers without thinking about it. The only common one I can think of that's currently used, though, is a dozen. But dozens used as a collective number of things. And it's probably a packaging thing, and it's, you know, one for each finger. So you can get a dozen bottles of beer, a dozen buns, a dozen cars, if you feel like it. But a dozen means, it means 12 of whatever you said next. How many did you get? A dozen. Now, as a word, it's silly because the word is exactly as long as 12, unless you're abbreviating it. But it's a collective thing, you know. A dozen elephants means 12 elephants. Okay, a dozen mosquitoes is the same number of mosquitoes. In chemistry, we're using a similar collective name, the mole. So the mole is a collective number of whatever you say next. A mole of copper atoms. A mole of elephants. A mole of stars.
A mole of moles.
A mole of moles. Yeah, that's probably less funny in New Zealand than it is in the Northern Hemisphere where you actually find moles. As the little furry animal rather than the melanic spot on your skin. So, it's a counting number. A mole is a counting number. Everything you read about it will give you some more complex definitions and how big it is. But at base, a mole is a counting number. I'm probably going to say that about 57,000 more times before we finish this. And so cunningly, the amount of matter or the amount of substance is given the number n. And if you translate it in your head as number, that's probably not a bad thing to do. Just don't let the UMBER out onto a page anywhere. But N is for number, and we count in moles because atoms are so small that any number we get is stupidly big. Anyone remember how long it would take you to count to a million? Someone calculated, and I forget exactly how long, but it's like a really, really long time. Most of your life. I have a million. Just while we're in there, I have the most boring book that I've ever written, well, the only book I've ever produced. This book of some hundreds of sheets of paper is comprised only of X's. So it's a million X's. That's... we'll just let it thud on the desk. Okay. I think someone twinked one out once, so it might be 999,999. That's a stupidly big number from anything that we have to count. If we're dealing with our fingers and toes, a million's an insane number. So we use maths and effectively just count the zeros. So atoms are unimaginably small from our perspective. They're so small that you can't see them in a microscope. Why can't you see them in a microscope? Talk? Okay, see, and light microscope. So otherwise you're visualizing it with something. Yeah, you can't see it with a light microscope. Camilo, do you have a... It's possible to visualize what people think are the outsides of atoms with a thing called a scanning tunneling microscope. But you can't see them with a light microscope because atoms are smaller than the wavelength of light. Light bends around them. So we see stuff because light hits you and bounces off into my eyes. Light hits me or the screen and bounces off into your eyes. That's because there's lots of atoms. If there's an individual atom, the light wave goes around the atom, and every one now and again, one might bounce off, but atoms are smaller than the wavelength of light. So, the scanning tunneling microscope uses electric charge and it visualizes little lumps on it. And it's an interesting thing to look up. IBM did an awful lot of work with this. So, a scanning tunneling microscope, and if you do a Google search for the terms STM and IBM, you'll find a whole lot of pictures, and they do pictures of individual atoms, or write the words IBM with atoms on something, or do some little pictures, I think a Japanese symbol, the like. Okay, atoms are unimaginably small, so the collective counting number that we use is really, really big. Okay? That's the number there. Although that green line is supposed to be a times, now that means that I've added stuff to the slide. So, dozen is 12, a mole is 6.02 times 10 to the power of 23. So, there are historical reasons for why we picked that number. Well, why that number was picked. It's known as Avogadro's number. But, what you need to know is, that's the number. Okay, 6.02 times 10 to the 23. I'm going to take a risk of the green pen. So, the mass of one mole of particles of a substance is called the... This is hard. The mass of a mole of substance is called the molar mass. This is where we run into the difficulty that in English with 26 letters, they don't appear to be enough to sensibly abbreviate. So the molar mass has got the symbol capital M, and the symbol for the mass that you use a weighing machine for is little m. So uppercase and lowercase, which makes it really interesting to write. So the mass of a mole of particles of a substance is called its molar mass. It's given the symbol capital M. It's got the units grams per mole. Now I'm writing grams moles to the minus 1 in the assumption that the mathematical giants amongst you will be able to cope with it. Well, actually, no. Everyone will be able to cope with that symbology, grams per mole, and have an idea what it means. It's written that way for ease of typesetting. What does moles to the minus one mean? Rowena? Okay, moles to the minus one is per mole. The other way of writing moles to the minus one, so mathematically that means grams divided by moles. And you've always got to be able to pronounce that as grams per mole. So language-wise, it's a wee challenge. But we need to cope. Grams per mole. Grams divided by moles. So the wee minus one thing, the wee minus one superscript means divided by, or the reciprocal of moles. And we're going to come back to that as well. There's going to be a little bit of teaching of mathematics in this, and therefore you're in some trouble because that's not one of the things I'm good at. Well, mathematics isn't one of the things I'm good at. You get to tell me if teaching it's something I'm better at. Okay, so we're pronouncing it grams per mole. Okay. Now, where does the mass of a substance come from? What are the heavy things in atoms? So anyone who said electrons needs... The next thing we need to have after someone says electrons is the slapping sound as you realise your silly mistake and slap yourself. It's protons and neutrons. So the heavy things are the things that you find in the nucleus. Protons plus neutrons. Okay, when we have a look at a periodic table, we'll find that molar masses are written on it, and we might just flick out of this and have a quick look at a periodic table. If we can find the periodic table, I'm not running too many things at once. Red not behaving. So, periodic table, if we look at hydrogen, now I'm not sure how easy that is to see, but hydrogen, atomic weight, 1.00794. The absolute classic of all, chlorine, 35.453. So, if we look at chlorine, element 17, group 17. So if it's element 17, how many protons does it have, Alex? 17. That was hard, wasn't it? Okay. How many neutrons does it have? The easiest answer is 18. 17 plus 18 makes 35. What about the 0.453? If we think about the mass of an electron, the mass of an electron is around 1/2000th of the mass of a proton. How many electrons do we have to make 0.453? Yeah, about 900. Okay. The answer is that some of the chlorine lurking around in the world has got 20 protons. So there's two kinds of chlorine commonly. One with 18 protons and one with 20 protons. Neutrons, thank you. One with 18 neutrons and one with 20 neutrons, and both with 17 protons. There, I finally got it all in one go. Okay, so we write isotopes. So isotope called chlorine 35, 17 protons, 18 neutrons. Chlorine 37, 17 protons, 20 neutrons. Reassuring thing about it, if it's got 17 protons, how many electrons is it likely to have? How many people for 17? How many people for some other number? How many people are going to get picked on for not having an opinion? Okay. Would both of them kill you? If you inhaled either of them, they would both kill you. Because they're both chlorine. 17 protons, 17 electrons. Out of shell of chlorine, one electron full, short of a full shell. It will take electrons from whatever's around it. If that's your lung tissue, this is a bad thing. Seriously, it's a bad thing. You should avoid it. What you smell in the swimming pool is not chlorine. It's what happens when chlorine acts upon body secretions. Things like chloramines and stuff. So if the swimming pool smells strongly of chlorine, this means the chlorine has been disinfecting lots of bodies. Yeah, it's a scary thought. It's not as scary as some things in swimming pools, but it's just one of them. So, two things with the same number of protons and different numbers of neutrons. Those two are isotopes. The atomic weight that's recorded on the periodic table is the actual weight of chlorine found in the wild. If you go chlorine hunting outside and you find some stuff, like if you find salt, for example, you can find the chloride ions, and if you weigh each one of them, well, you have to probably put like a truckload together and weigh them, then the actual weight of wild chlorine is 35.45. The easiest way to work this one out is to work this through is if we round it. So if we had to round 35.45, what does it round to?
35.
Yeah, we're going to call it 35.5 just between, because we're not rounding very accurately. So wild chlorine. On the assumption that a little bit of, so most of the chlorine in the world is chlorine 35. A little bit of it's chlorine 37. Okay, someone who can do arithmetic faster than I can. I'm hoping that I'm doing okay with this one. Not done on your head? Sorry? I'm really glad it's 35.5. It means that I can remember how to do this. If in the wild, three atoms are chlorine 35 and one's chlorine 37, the average weight of wild chlorine is 35.5, which is somewhere close to the measured, to our measured data. So, three atoms weigh that much. Three atoms weigh 35. One atom weighs 37. Average weight, 35.5. So, that's the difference between the mass you read on the periodic table and the mass of each isotope. When we did isotopes, we hopefully had a look at some of these and discussed it. Some of these have very few isotopes. Fluorine, atomic number 9, atomic weight really close to 19. And if you read a lot of periodic tables, you'd look at that and say, only one isotope. So there's one major isotope. Helium, most helium in the world is helium 4. Bromine, on the other hand, is working itself out. And if you want to cheat, I can cheat. Technetium, atomic mass, exactly 98. Now, they actually cheat. Well, they actually cheat for synthetic elements. Synthetic elements on the periodic table always simply report the mass of the most common stable isotope. So if it's an exact number like that, and the periodic tables you've got in your books have it little square brackets. And it's got a note somewhere on it. Little square brackets are short for the most common stable isotope. If we do, how many do we remember these things? What's the largest naturally occurring element? Not the last one. Okay, we play spot this little game. Who can see atomic mass on this picture? Uranium, 238.02891. Neptunium, 237. Uranium is the largest naturally occurring element, which I find a little bit odd, because decay of uranium can technically make neptunium, but it's neither here nor there. Last piece where we're mentioning isotopes, at least in passing. In the last couple of weeks, another gap on the periodic table has been filled in. Yes.
Why is it 4? Why do you create a unit? Are they used
for anything? Yes and no is the answer to are they used for anything. Plutonium, used for anything?
Okay.
Used for nuclear reactors and bombs. element 95, variously called americium or americium. Guess what that's used for? Commonly found in houses. I would guess that more than half of you have got it in your house. Radioactive. Synthetic element. How many people have got smoke alarms? Yeah. Smoke alarms? A lot of smoke alarms, you read the back and it's got that little nuclear symbol saying, do not disassemble. Contains a small amount of microcuries of element 85. There's another story written in the bottom line there. Well, actually written in this line and in the very bottom line of period 7. So period 7's all synthetic after radium. So francium, radium. Then it goes through, if we're not talking about actinium, thorium, palladium, uranium. After that, neptunium, plutonium, americium, curium, berkelium, californium, einsteinium, fermium, mendeleevium, nobelium, lawrencium, rutherfordium, dubnium, seaborgium, borium, hassium, meitnerium, darmstadtium, and copernicium. And you can see the rest of them are named in Latin. The grade ones hadn't existed when that table was written. Now that whole row has been filled in. Bottom line, just for a second. Okay. Guess where a whole lot of these synthetic elements were made? Shall we try? Read me. Actually. 98. 97. Berkelium. Californium. So what university was it made in? Berkeley. University of California at Berkeley. In what country? America. By who? Glenn Seaborg. Glenn Seaborg is the only person, the only living person who had an element named after him. Because he got to play with a particle accelerator. Guys who made it at the beginning, guys like Einstein, Fermi, Mendeleev, who invented the table, Alfred Nobel, who invented dynamite. Yes. Radioactivity. Polonium's the largest non-radioactive element. I beg your pardon, bismuth's the largest non-radioactive element. The first clear one, therefore, is polonium, radioactive. Where's my other table? This one here shows that table because it was made in Europe. So bismuth, 83 protons is the largest number that you can stick together when they don't start falling apart. So polonium, astatine and radon, these ones here are radioactive. Radon, quite common, astatine, really rare.
Okay.
So radon's released from like granite rocks in ancient, like Europe. Anywhere that's got old granite releases radon gas, which is becoming more of an issue now we build houses that are sealed. Previously, old drafty houses, didn't matter if there was radioactive gas coming up through the floor because it like left through the window. But now we keep it in the house. Scotland's got a reasonable amount of radon. At least somebody had the assumption that one of the reasons that Scotsmen wear kilts was to actually reduce the mutagenic effect of radon, because you can reduce mutagenic effect if you keep testicular temperature approximately 2 degrees below body temperature. And kilts are very good at that. And bike shorts are very bad at that. And some other national costumes are probably quite bad at that too, but we won't. Okay, well, I'll stop about there. Okay, the atomic weight comes from the average mass of isotopes. So when you're looking for atomic mass, you look for the big number in the periodic table. So, if we've got sodium chloride, and we want to find out what the molar mass of sodium chloride is, we've looked up the molar mass of chlorine, 35.453. We look up the molar mass of sodium, and find it something like 23.1 from memory. What's, sorry? 22.99, all right. Thank you. 23-ish. So what's the mass of sodium chloride? Only 5. So, the mass of a thing is basically the mass of all the protons and neutrons that are in the room at the time. So, it's the 23 from sodium, the 35.5 from chlorine. 1 sodium chloride, 58.5. Now, there's a problem with that, of course. What's the problem? The problem is it's Tuesday morning and everybody's really asleep and they're hoping like anything, I'm not going to say anything else. Okay.
If you're just adding the molar masses, say, of sodium and chlorine, you're going to get the mass of possibly 2 moles rather than 1 mole.
That's not actually, yeah. Maybe. The question, more the actually bigger version of the question, is: does sodium chloride exist as a molecule? What sort of compound is sodium chloride? It's ionic. Okay, what's the structure of an ionic solid? Alternating positive and negative ions locked into a lattice, pretty little crystal. Zillions of ions in size. So, we're getting a little bit... I'm getting past myself. The molar mass of any compound is obtained by adding up the molar masses of the atoms that make it up. So, sodium chloride is the mass of sodium plus the mass of chlorine. 1 chlorine. So, we've always got to... This is the time when formulae become really, really, really important. Wow. Okay. Now, if you're given a problem about this kind of thing, you're always going to be given the molar masses or a periodic table. Or, unlike me, relying on my memory. So we've said sodium chloride. Now let's have a look at carbon dioxide. Molar mass of carbon, 12. Molar mass of oxygen, 16. And we're going to assume it's oxygen just for today. So, molar mass of carbon, how many carbons are there? So 12 times 1, how many oxygens are there? 2. So, carbon dioxide is 112 plus 2 16s is 44 grams per mole. Hopefully there's nothing hard about that. All coping? All right. We're going to investigate. Ooh. Wonder what happens if I poke this. Nothing. Right. Yippee! Well, apologise for PowerPoints that I made back in the day when I actually found animation. Okay. I knew I was going to get there sometime. Photographs of atoms. This is an artificially colorized photograph of gold atoms. tungsten. I tell a lie. Okay. Now, have a look at the size. I know it doesn't necessarily mean very much. Image size, 500 square picometers. Picometer, 10 to the minus 12. That's not quite the same as particle accelerator things, but it's pretty tiny. And if you tried hard, you could probably determine what looked like the picture of atoms in there, true? Okay. So we've said atoms are very small. So we've talked about counting numbers. The problem with chemistry is that atoms all weigh different amounts, but the only way that we've got of measuring stuff is with a weighing machine. We can't be like people in a pharmacy and count out 24 pills. We can't count 12 carbon atoms and 24 oxygen atoms and put them in a little vessel and make carbon dioxide. We can weigh 12 grams of carbon, and we can weigh, if we try, 32 grams of oxygen, but we can't count them. You can't see them, you can't count them. The only thing we can do is weigh them, which means that we're searching for some analogies that help us do this. So weighing is the only easy way of dealing with chemicals and some other things. So the classic picture of this, and I was accidentally talking to the other chemistry class yesterday, and I accidentally ended up in there for the whole period, but talked about buying fencing staples. Because I live on a small farm and we have to occasionally buy fencing stuff. So I bought 25 kilograms of fencing staples, which is way more than I ever wanted to count, I have to say, because it's a box this big. So I'm guessing certainly hundreds of them. But if you're buying, hardware like this is always that kind of thing. Nails, those are 50 millimeter nails, 2.15 millimeter diameter, but they're sold in a package of, if you're trying to buy nails, you can't go and say, I'd like three, please. In the old days, you probably could. You could go to an old hardware store. But commonly, we're now living in an era of plastically packaged these, and today's news, which is that you go to a service station, which is not adequately named because they won't serve your car at all. Won't check the oil, won't check the tyre pressures, and certainly won't put air in the tyres because there are potential work hazards, and occupational safety and health legislation means that they may not. In the old days, people who sold petrol usually were mechanics who also sold petrol. Now, petrol sale is a service industry and people don't tend to do it. Hardware is also a service industry and you package things. Now, that being said, I remember going and buying a 150mm nail and like buying just one. But in general, you walk into a big hardware chain store, you buy 500 grams of 50mm nails. You buy 500 grams of 100mm nails. Which package has got the most nails in it? Okay? Let's go back through them. 50mm? 100mm? And whatever that one is. 30mm nails. 30s? Which one looks like it's got the most nails in it? That one. Okay, the smaller the... Okay, 500 grams means you get a lot of little things or a few big things. That actually is that's the biggest piece of mental gymnastics with doing this. Everything we get in chemistry, we get on these weighing machines. And we've borrowed some wonderfully accurate ones from the University Chemistry Department. We spend huge amounts of money on it. Some of our science labs have got large slabs of granite in them because that was where you put a really expensive balance. Certainly we've said to the biology class who are using those ones, that we'd appreciate you not leaning on it, because that's the, you know, if you break it, you've bought it scenario. If you've got a spare few thousand dollars, we'd like rather you just donated it to the school rather than had to buy a new balance. But you can spend thousands of dollars on weighing machines, because accuracy is important, because that's the only way we can determine how much stuff we've got. Okay, so if we're looking at it, N is for number of, the amount of a substance measured in moles. So N's the number. Okay, so we can, M's the mass, big M's the something else. And we can probably watch the PowerPoint just to see whether I had fun with the animations again. So N is the amount, little n is the amount of substance, it's measured in moles. Little m, the mass of a substance measured in grams, with one of those weighing machiney things. And the abbreviation for grams is nice too. Okay. Okay, capital M. What's a capital M? The molar mass of a substance. So if you had to translate the molar mass of a substance, what's it sort of roughly mean? I feel some other learning tasks coming on. No, not. Moles is a counting number. It's the number you get to just after you get to 6 times 10 to the power of 23 when you're counting from 1. So it's the amount of substance. It's actually how many there are. Molar mass is protons and neutrons. So molar mass is the weight of an atom. And while you can't weigh one, that's the other version of this. How many people have seen the competition, how many jelly beans are in this jar type of thing? How do you work out how many jelly beans are in the jar? Okay, you weigh an empty jar, and you weigh one jelly bean. If you're trying to get more accurate, how many jelly beans should you weigh? Some number big enough to give a sensible number on the balance. There's a whole bunch of these types of things where you can weigh, and if you can translate it easily, you can count it. One of them, just in passing, and it's probably, again, technology means there's the demise of a lot of these wonderful techniques. Back in the day, and some of you will have seen this because some of you have done physics, and at least one of our physics teachers loves graphs. And one of the tasks that you get graphing is to calculate the area underneath a graph. And calculating the area underneath a horizontal line graph is easy, because you can calculate the area. Determining the area under a graph with humps, multiple curves, is more difficult. And before we got computers to integrate the area, the most common way that researchers did it was to actually cut it out and weigh it. If you cut out a square of graph paper with a known number of little squares in it, like you cut out 100 squares and weigh them, then you cut out your difficult shape and weigh it. So you know the mass of 100 squares, you know the mass of your wiggly shape, you can work out how many squares you've got. So it's that we're dealing with that kind of thing in quantitative chemistry. Each of the things that we weigh, the atoms, weigh different amounts. But we know what they weigh. So we use a weighing machine, we get 3 grams, we get 58.5 grams of sodium chloride. we can work out exactly how many sodium ions there are in that pile of salt. 58 grams is what? 3 or 4 tablespoons of salt? We can work it out exactly because we know that. So, the mass of a substance measured in grams, that's the measuring thing. The number of moles, the amount of substance, is the counting thing. Molar mass is the conversion thing. And the actual number of particles in a mole of substance is a horrendously big number. Right. The bad news for you, right now, we don't have assembly and you've got 10 more minutes of this. Aren't you lucky? Ooh! Yuck! Lesson for people using PowerPoint on a smart board. Do not say save your drawings as part of your PowerPoint presentation. Okay. Does it turn up on your picture? It doesn't. Excellent. Okay. So the only other difficult thing we need is this, like, implied one. So if we're doing nitric acid, how many hydrogens are there? One. How many nitrogens? How many oxygens? Three. So the mass of nitric acid, we add them all up. Hydrogen weighs 1, nitrogen 14, oxygen 3. So the actual total mass of the thing, 1 plus 14 plus 48. Guess how many times I've done 3 times 16. How many years have I taught quantitative chemistry? So, one molecule of nitric acid has a mass of 63 grams per mole. One mole of nitric acid weighs 63 grams. Yeah, that's it. If I could find where the rest of the... Okay. It says take a quiz. We shan't take a quiz at the moment. What I'll ask you to do is actually something a little bit different. And so it's going to come under the heading of chemistry homework that's not on Best Choice. However, this is a thing that Best Choice will work really, really well about at. So, first premise, a mole is a counting number. It's 6 times 10 to the power of 23, whatever it was. Mass I nearly wrote mass as the measury thing. Molar mass is the conversion factor. So the big things for this are we can only weigh things with a weighing machine. We want to know how many things we've got. We need to run a conversion factor. So what I would like you to bring me on Thursday is a creative rendition of something here, most simply. And I think it's going to be really useful to do first variation of this is a poster of around sort of A3 size, which we can stick on the wall. It says, the mole is a counting number. So, that or. So a poster that says a mole is a counting number is fine. Otherwise, if you need a little bit more structure, a creative rendition of those three things. You can think how you do that. I'm going to be really unprescriptive. So if you're feeling very creative, all three things together, somehow. If we have four young gentlemen together who want to do barbershop quartet, I'm quite happy. If you just want to do a poster because you're feeling you don't want to spend too much time on this, mole is a counting number. If we want to produce video, that's also fine. So, every now and again, there's not very much opportunity to let creativity out in chemistry. We're letting it out now. And in fact, I think you can spend the next 5 minutes thinking about how you might do that.